You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system. On RadioAryan.com.
I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain. We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right, 'cause the fireworks aren't to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We'll set a wedding full of clowns, and we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, 'cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America, the best idea since democracy.
Hello and welcome once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, to the Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization Podcast, right here exclusively on RadioAryan.com. Every week, bringing you news, entertainment, and politics that you will not find anywhere else except for the website, WhiteNationalist.com, or the Roper Report site, .wordpress.com, where there are daily update articles. But for my audio, you know you ought to listen to right here on RadioAryan.com. Every week live at 3 o'clock Central, Wednesday, and then for download all week long. This week on RadioAryan.com's The Roper Report, we're going to bring you an exclusive report all the way from the Stormfront Activism Conference that happened this last weekend in beautiful, scenic, downtown, crime-free Eastern Tennessee in the Crossville area at the Cumberland Mountain State Park. I have an official report that I will read to you, and then we're going to talk about what went wrong, what went right, what we can improve next time. I also have something that I was not intended to have. We were not supposed to be able to bring this to you, ladies and gentlemen, but the controlled media on the local level really screwed up. You know, always when we give interviews to the controlled media, we take it for granted that whatever we say is going to be censored and edited and purged and sliced and diced and put back together into something that's not really any resemblance at all of what we actually said. We just know, before we say anything, that it's going to be rebroadcast completely out of context, maybe even fabricated. Well, this time, they messed up. Guess what they did? The Knoxville Sentinel newspaper actually videotaped an interview with me outside the Stormfront Activism Conference this last weekend in Eastern Tennessee. And it was a 6.5 minute long videotaped interview. However, they inadvertently posted the entire unedited, uncensored interview to their Facebook page. Now, I anticipate that when they discover that they've done this, they're going to be filled with chagrin and humiliation and embarrassment. In the meantime, though, I'm doing everything in my power to make the full interview public to you, our listening audience, so that you can get an idea of what an interview with a white nationalist who knows what he's doing actually sounds like before the Jewish-controlled media and their post-production censors have an opportunity to get a hold of it and start slicing and dicing. Now, before I bring you the audio of this interview from last weekend, I want to share with you the difference in my voice. For the first time, the Roper Report on RadioAryan.com is using a new professional podcast microphone, and I want to express my sincere gratitude and thanks to Sven Longshanks of RadioAryan.com, who made the higher quality audio broadcast that you're hearing right now possible through his generous donation to the Roper Report of this professional quality podcast microphone. Thanks to Sven. Hopefully you'll be able to hear me a lot better and a lot more clearly. And it will also encourage me to do my utmost to bring you the kind of quality reporting and commentary that you deserve to hear to justify the expenditure of this professional quality podcast microphone. So I wanted to thank Sven for that and thank all of you, my dear listeners, for continuing to support the radio show, The Roper Report, on RadioArian.com with your generous non-tax-deductible contributions to Roper_Billy@Yahoo.com in the PayPal fashion. That's PayPal to Roper_Billy@Yahoo.com, where you can help support The Roper Report and join the numbers 14 and 88 in the letters H and X as our official sponsors. We come to you commercial-free every week, and we rely on the support of generous listeners just like you to help us stay on the air and to bring you news and entertainment that you will not find anywhere else except right here on RadioArian.com and The Roper Report. Now, this 6.5-minute-long audio broadcast that you're about to hear needs a little bit of introduction for those of you who have not actually heard the videos or the interviews or read the articles yet that happened this last weekend at the Stormfront Conference. It's really my responsibility, I feel, to give you some introduction and to tell you that there was a leak and Antifa discovered where the conference was going to be held. Fortunately, we were able to find backup restaurant venues for the meet and greet previous to the actual conference itself on Saturday, and we were able to find a larger, more secure, and more private venue for the conference itself on Saturday. We were all able to secure that within a couple of hours of arriving. So Antifa were embarrassed and humiliated once again. So once again, the white nationalist community united to defeat Antifa and practice our First Amendment protected rights to peaceably assemble and speak right there September the 29th through October the 1st, all last weekend in Eastern Tennessee. So leaders and spokespersons from the League of the South and the Shieldwall Network, the Traditionalist Worker Party, the Knights Party, and other organizations also networked together while they discussed tactics and strategies for accelerated real-world activism in the future. The conference attendees far outnumbered the pitiful handful of pansexual and transsexual and communist anti-white protesters who were kept far away from any Stormfront supporters by a professional and admittedly courteous law enforcement community, as well as just by their protesters' own innate cowardice. The miserable Antifa were actually driven away from the meeting area completely several hours before the conference even ended and were nowhere to be seen thereafter. So many thanks to the disciplined, efficient, and vigilant event security staff from the Shieldwall Network Phalanx as they worked hard to keep everyone safe and secure throughout the day and the early evening. I have to also mention that inside, as well as out, there was never a moment when our safety was in jeopardy, thanks to the Shieldwall Network and the TWP and the League of the South security personnel. They escorted people to and from their vehicles and also protected them at the previous night's social meet and greet dinner. Inside the conference, there were several merchandise tables set up. They were lined with books and t-shirts and pins and patches and a lot of free literature, as you can imagine, from all the represented organizations, and they were all perused by the customers who attended the conference during our catered pizza buffet lunch. And it was good pizza, too, let me add. The videos and other audio recordings of some of the speeches from the Stormfront Conference by myself and Tom Pierce and Dr. Mike Hill and others will be made available in the near future. As usual, you know, the conference generated a lot of controlled media publicity for the pro-white cause. From USA Today and the Knoxville News Sentinel, the Nashville Tennessean, the UK Daily Mail, and even Al Jazeera, I've seen Malaysian and German newspaper accounts, different articles from different perspectives, as well as other local television, radio, and newspaper reports. Even tabloid fake news from the far left, such as the Huffington Post, also published fictional stories on the successful event. Now, to see a list, to actually have hyperlinks to all the many articles, well, frankly, not all of them, but to a few dozen of the more widespread articles about this last weekend's Stormfront Activism Congress, we want you to go to the Roper Report site, .wordpress.com. That's the Roper Report site, .wordpress.com, or to the other The Roper Report, white nationalists, plural, white nationalists, plural, .com. So you can go to the Roper Report site, .wordpress.com, or whitenationalists.com to read a full list of the media articles, and I won't cite them all for you, but suffice to say that we got international media coverage. And had the tragedy not occurred in Las Vegas early this morning, I feel confident that the Stormfront Conference would very likely be one of the headline stories globally, just as Charlottesville was a couple of months ago. Let me speak about what happened in Las Vegas just for a moment. I'm not going to guess or hypothesize or conjecture about the nature of the motivation of the shooter. I have seen some claims that he was non-white. I've seen pictures of the majority of claims that he actually was white, although some people think that he was Jewish. I honestly don't know. I have seen almost universally pictures verifying that his female companion, his girlfriend, is a non-white Asian woman. And so that means that by definition then, since he was a race mixer, the shooter in Las Vegas was certainly mentally ill. Now, how one person could get that many rounds of ammunition, that many firearms up onto the 32nd floor of a hotel, and considering the fact that, like all of you, I've stayed in those kind of hotels, and I know that all those windows are sealed to keep people from jumping out, especially casinos where people might lose their lunch and decide they wanted to end it all. I don't understand, I cannot comprehend how one lone individual could bring weapons, that number of weapons, that amount of ammunition, to the 32nd floor, and why he even would. What person would need 10 long guns to do a shooting like that? Of course not. You need one good one, perhaps two in case one fails. And even if it was an automatic weapon, for the 32nd floor of a hotel, your firing is not going to be accurate. You're either going to use a rifle with a scope if you're going to fire from that height and that distance, and you might get one person at the time, and then you're going to have 2 to 3 seconds in between shots, or, and this appears to be the case, it's going to be automatic fire. Now, for those of you who are concerned about the Second Amendment being attacked through a reaction to this shooting, remember that automatic weapons are already very tightly controlled. I don't know what possible law could have been passed to have prevented this attack, short of the complete disembowelment of our entire Second Amendment. I don't know the details about what type of weapon was used, and honestly, I don't think that anyone has made that information publicly available yet. So I also cannot conjecture on that. But I can tell you that from what I've heard and from what I've seen, from the video I've witnessed of the attack, it was automatic weapons fire. I can also tell you, frankly, it does not sound like it originated from only one source or only one weapon. It is almost impossible for me to imagine how one lone gunman could have killed 58 people and counting and shot over 500 more in such a short amount of time with automatic fire. I understand that the concert area was packed with humans. Many of them panicked, didn't know where to run to. They were basically fish in a barrel. Be that as it may, while I don't wear a tinfoil hat and I don't normally subscribe to conspiracy theories or false flag theories about these kind of shootings, I have some severe doubts. I have some very serious questions about how any one individual could have enacted such a toll, especially one without any military training, someone of his age, and his apparent lack of sobriety. All that we know for sure at this time is that the person who is being blamed for this attack apparently recently converted to Islam and was a supporter of ISIS was an enemy of Dr. David Duke, as well as President Donald Trump, was an enemy of white nationalism, and was, of course, a race traitor, therefore mentally ill. I am glad that he is dead. I wish that his death had happened about an hour earlier. I do not know whether or not, to be honest with you, though, that he acted alone. I'm afraid that he may have been another patsy, and we may not ever know. But I encourage you to look deeply into this situation as some more of the facts become more publicly known. And over the course of the next few weeks, as I'm able to investigate and research further into this attack, I'll bring you what I find here on The Rope Report. Now, that having been said, that is, of necessity and rightly so, the largest news headline in the nation today, as well as throughout the world. Had that not been the case, I sincerely feel that the Stormfront Conference this last weekend would have gotten even more media publicity than it actually did. As it was, several different nations covered the story, and I've been besieged with onslaughts of phone calls and emails and instant messages and tweets from reporters from all over the globe today. I've tried to handle as many of those interviews and those requests for commentaries as possible. It's been a very exhausting weekend, but I want to do my best to bring you an accurate account of what happened in Eastern Tennessee. So let me just let you listen to this 6.5 minute long interview, which occurred Saturday between myself and a newspaper reporter there from the Knoxville Sentinel, who was videotaping this interview for future editing for the Knoxville Sentinel's website, but inadvertently ended up airing the entire interview. And I think you can decide for yourself whether that was a mistake on her part or not.
Okay, so Billy Roper, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And so you said that you organized this summit after Don Black's event kind of ended up falling through.
This is the Stormfront Replacement Conference. We're calling it Stormfront 6.5 rather than Stormfront 7. But it's an activist-focused workshop and seminar series we're going to do this weekend to teach our people how to become persons of influence in their community, as well as how to run for local public office, and about activism, including protests and rallies and demonstrations, so that we can do so in a safe manner to exercise our freedom of speech under the First Amendment.
And so I guess you guys are kind of off to a rocky start. I heard last night your reservation at a restaurant locally was canceled. Is that right?
Actually, subjectively speaking, not really a rocky start. The Lord blessed us and gave us the opportunity to actually adapt, improvise, and overcome. So we ended up with a larger lodge and a larger restaurant venue, both of which we actually needed because we had a larger crowd than anticipated. So it worked out luckily. Antifa punked out once again and did not show up like they threatened to. So it worked out great for us. So we had a larger venue.
And so about how many people are you saying?
How many were at the dinner last night?
And today.
Around four dozen at the dinner last night, and there might be maybe twice that number here today.
And so you guys had mentioned that you were planning on doing this at the restaurant down there. What spurred the change to come to the rec center?
We need a larger banquet room. Actually, we did not have room there in the banquet for what we needed, and so we had to upsize. And so we did. And this lodge is going to hold 180 people, according to the parks estimate. And I think that'll be large enough.
Okay, so this didn't have anything to do with the protesters being out there and not being where much of the, police force is.
Well, we've only seen one protester, and he didn't stay very long. For some reason, he had, I guess, other appointments elsewhere and turned tail and ran. And none of them had the guts to show up last night at the restaurant like they threatened to. They punked out again. So, and we haven't had any problem with protesters aside from that one trying to verbally assault myself. And then I used my First Amendment to respond in kind, and he quickly left. So aside from him, we haven't had any trouble with protesters at all.
Okay. We hadn't actually heard from the park rangers about protesters coming up here yet.
Yeah.
They've been saying that they've been at a separate venue right now.
Right.
They're over at the restaurant.
Yeah. Well, most of those people can't even know what bathroom to use, much less what place to come and protest at.
So what is your group's intent here today?
Our intent is to use our First Amendment, and we're going to gather peacefully together and to discuss politics and nationalism and our use of our other 10 amendments in the Bill of Rights to express our political views and to work towards our people's future.
And we've seen over at the University of Tennessee campus, traditionalist Worker Party flyers are showing up on campus. Many of them have been torn down. You mentioned on the phone that this is an event that you're trying to get younger people to come to.
Right.
Is this all kind of part of a bigger effort?
Well, the effort is really something, I don't have to sell anything, it sells itself. The effort is happening because more and more Americans are waking up to what's happening to our country as it polarizes and balkanizes on the way to separation. And as those divisions become more and more stark, millennials especially, who are not so much brainwashed by the controlled media, are on the front lines of being awakened, getting the red pill. And as they become politically conscious, it is younger people, college-age people, who are leading that front line.
Okay. And so when you talk about activism and trying to wake people up, mm-hmm. what are you trying to get people to do? Is this supposed to be like another kind of Charlottesville thing, or what's going on?
Well, no, we're not protesting the removal of a Confederate monument as they were in Charlottesville. This is an activist workshop. We're going to have seminars, breakout sessions, and brainstorming classes where we have an opportunity to exchange ideas about how better to do protests and rallies and demonstrations in the future, as well as allow people to run for local elected office, and also to do other kinds of activism, both online and what we call IRL in real life.
Okay. And then, so I have a question just generally. I guess it does kind of apply here with the reservation being canceled last night. But generally, when you guys go places, I think a lot of communities stand up and say that you're not welcome here. I mean, do you have any kind of response to that?
Define community. What would community mean? Crossville, like most of eastern Tennessee, is predominantly white. And according to most of the polls that I have seen, a large majority of white Americans do not want to become a minority in the nation that was established of, by, and for them, literally by the founding fathers.
Well,
and by today's definition would be white nationalists.
A lot of people from Crossville were saying that they didn't want you guys out here.
Can you quantify that a lot?
I mean, I can't give you a number off the top of my head, but I was monitoring this kind of stuff before I came out just to get an idea.
Yeah, a lot of people have sock puppet accounts, and a lot of people from out of state who are Antifa, who are communist and anarchist and radical homosexual activists, don't want white Americans to have a voice in this country anymore, because they want us to be minorities in it on the way to white genocide and extinction, and we're determined to make sure that doesn't happen. So whatever quantification they could have to their numbers, you know, we're not going to have an election to decide our people's future.
But I mean, I guess you can't deny that almost anywhere you guys go, there's protesters, right?
I've been to a lot of places where there are not protesters, and because the Antifa, once they're exposed as being cowardly communists and anarchists and homosexual activists who are against the grain of mainstream America, then they generally slink off to whatever hole they crawled out of.
But you feel like, you know, this gathering and the protests that you guys participate in and these other things are not something that is offensive to the locals.
My political views are the same as those of America's founding fathers. And I don't think that's very offensive to locals here in eastern Tennessee.
Is there anything that you'd like to add?
No, I appreciate you coming today. And I want to tell people that our position politically is the same as theirs. We are more willing to express through our First Amendment rights what they feel, but which are silent about. But they are coming in our direction. And when you get here, we'll be ready for you.
Deutschland, Sicherheit! Deutschland, Sicherheit! Deutschland, Sicherheit! Deutschland, Sicherheit! Deutschland, Sicherheit!
Now, as I said previously at the top of the hour, at the beginning of the show, we're going to be releasing videos of some of the speeches which occurred at the Stormfront Activism Conference this last weekend. But before we do, I'd like to take a few minutes to let you know, just to give you a preview about what I talked about. My speech at the Stormfront Conference was based on nuts and bolts in real-world activism. And I had a 10-point program which I suggested. And as we discussed the pros and cons of some of my ideas in the question-answer session, which lasted for about a half hour after my hour-long speech, I really developed these theories even more thoroughly, more deeply than ever before. And so I'd like to share with you what the current discussion is about future activism for our new coalition. Now, obviously, we don't have time to go into all 10 of these activism points today. But I would like to discuss the first 5, perhaps, in the time that we have left. Now, this was entitled Activist Act. And my first point of Activist Act was to recap from 2001 to 2002 my German embassy demonstrations in Washington, D.C., and the Israeli embassy demonstrations, which we did 3 times there in the Capitol, and the Battle of York, Pennsylvania, and also the culmination of these ever-increasing in size demonstrations at the U.S. Capitol itself in August of 2002, where over 1,000 white nationalists gathered there, the largest number to ever gather at the U.S. Capitol since World War II. Our tactics back then, during the 2000-2002 era, when I was the deputy membership coordinator for Dr. William Pierce of the National Alliance, were to set a time and a date and a location with a cause attached to it, and then to contact all the allied groups and organizations that might march with us to let them know that this was where the event would be and when. And then I'd contact the ARA, the Black Bloc, and goad them into coming out in opposition to us by shaming them into a fight, picking a fight, like they say in Braveheart. And then I would contact the local and regional media and tell them that there was going to be a big newsworthy confrontation, a contention between the two sides. And then I would go back and play that up to our supporters and our allies as a big event that they did not want to miss out on to create larger attendance. And this is what I call white power jujitsu, using the power of the controlled media and even larger anti-white organizations against them through leverage. Now, the second point of my 10-point program was to discuss from 2003 forward, when I was the chairman of White Revolution. Because I had control over my own destiny and was my own boss, we showed less restraint and used white power jujitsu even more thoroughly. So that's using the weight of the Jewish-controlled media to reach more normies, the idea being that even with their editorializing, if the media just spells our name correctly, then the best and most salvageable of the normies can later on, you know, find us through social media or on our own internet platforms, our websites and blogs, absent that Jewish media filter in between us. So we use political theater. And political theater is whatever is necessary legally to become newsworthy and to trigger a reaction. We were trolling when trolling wasn't even cool or even invented yet. As a matter of fact, we were trolling when most of the people who troll today weren't even thought of yet, weren't even born yet. So we have a relatively small group of white protesters who could leverage mass media attention to our cause, even if they're outnumbered 20-1 by counter-protesters. And some examples of that were our demonstrations in Gainesville and San Antonio and in Coeur d'Alene and at the SPLC headquarters in Montgomery and the huge one in Boston at the Holocaust Remembrance Day, where we had 17 activists who faced down over 2,000 Jewish and Jew-supporting protesters. Now, the third point in my Activist Act program, and of course I'm giving you just the bare-bones summary and synopsis of what was really over an hour-long speech, followed by a half-hour question-answer session, as I said. But we talked about how, with police becoming more hostile to us due to the local mayors and the governors opposing us, such as in the ADL's-driven governor's contract signed now by 300 mayors, which you can read at governorscontract.org, we may need to move away from our tradition of always working with local law enforcement. And I gave them the examples contrasting our reception in Harrison with our reception in Batesville for the anti-Sharia march, where we met in his office with the chief of police, who was very professional and courteous and fair to both sides. And that with Searcy, where the law enforcement community and the county government were openly in support of us. And then the other extreme in Charlottesville, where local law enforcement purposefully and literally betrayed the permit holders. So in the future, I advocated that we may need to use pro-white flash mobs to hold demonstrations with very little warning to the local media and none to the local police or opposition In other words, just not bothering with the permits. We need to get to the point, I advocated, that we can defend ourselves and depend only on our own people and not on the police. And certainly we don't need the police to protect us from the Antifa. If anything, we know the reality is that the police exist and are there to protect those squirrely little limp-wristed faggots from us. Someday, they'll no longer be in between us. But we shouldn't necessarily, I feel, always telegraph our punches, especially now that through this ADL-sponsored Mayor's Compact, they're going to be working to isolate us and to keep us away from not only the media that would be able to amplify our message, but also away from the public that we're trying to reach with us. Now, the fourth platform in my 10-platform Activist Act speech is about doxing and trolling. And I simply stated that doxing is a way to use legally available, publicly found personal information from online to isolate and identify and to make famous our enemies just like they do us, and to show them that doxing and exposure is actually a two-way street. I recommended that people, when they're doxing our enemies, do not target the Antifa organizers, because like us, to be honest with you, they're ideologically driven and they love the martyrdom. Instead, target their supporters, anyone who likes or shares their social media pages and posts, anybody on their fringes who can be identified as a donor or sympathizers. Research them online using publicly available and therefore legally publishable information like their name and their spouse's name, place of work, home and business address, email, phone number, contact information for the bosses, and all those kind of things to make them famous. Use a narrative then next to tie them to an extreme or violent statement or action by the left, even indirectly. And then make it public through social media and blog posts and even flyers in their neighborhoods. This undermines our enemy's support and can literally destroy Antifa's base, as we use it to do in Arkansas this past year, as you've heard about on past episodes of The Rope Report. Dox their spouses, dox their families, dox their dogs, and shut them down. Shut them down. I mean, it works. It's proven and effective. It works on our side and work on them, too. It's a two-way street. Make this intimidation tactic a two-way street. Start punching back, folks. And so I had a discussion of doxing and told people, of course, they can be careful to not break the law. Still be very active in playing whack-a-mole with their enemies until they found out, as we have found out, that there is a price to be paid. There is a cost to their activism, and we're willing to exact that toll. Number five, I said sometimes it's good to just go old school and not to depend on social media or the internet. Literature distributions of flyers, especially to racially diverse neighborhoods, and follow them up, you know, by calls to local media to complain, to get media attention to the flyers and our cause. Similarly, with stickers and business cards, and use two-man teams, do quick hits in and out, discreetly, one person driving, the other throwing the scrolled flyers out the window. Use short, pithy memes, not long diatribes, with graphics and their contact information, legally, not in mailboxes or on screen doors. Throw them out just like the newspaper is, scrolled. And then we discussed some of the more contentious points that I thought was crucial that to be brought to the forefront, placed on the table, and talked about. That is optics. Whether or not one should use extreme optics or uniform optics, whether one should have tight discipline or more lax libertarian controls. And we'll talk about those second five points in my Activist Act speech at this last weekend's Stormfront Conference next week, right here on The Rope Report. But as you can see, this was the tone and tenor of my discussion. I honestly felt that the people who had traveled all that distance to be there did not need a cheerleading speech or any kind of inspirational testimony. They were there. That means they're already committed. They're already the kind of leaders and activists that we need, the kind that we've been looking for. So they've already proven that just by showing up. It's not to say that there aren't other activists and leaders who were unable to come, but those who were there did not need me to stand there for an hour and to cite uniform crime statistics at them, or to tell them my theory behind the culture of critique and evolutionary Jewish socio-psychology. They didn't need me to tell them about my books or my Balkanization theory or what I felt was going to be our nation's future. What we were there for was not to philosophize or to indulge in onanistic theory. We were there to do some nuts and bolts planning for tactics and strategies of in real life activism, to put boots on the ground and to network and work together. Many of these people meeting one another for the first time for our people's future, and to attempt to put our differences aside for the 14 words that we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. Now, there are many good speeches, but I think that the one that touched me the most might have been Dr. Michael Hill of the League of the South speech. I found him to be eloquent and erudite, dynamic, charismatic, very inspiring, as well as informative. And it was a great white pill also to hear Al speak. I'm not going to give his full name. It's not my place. But I can tell you that he's been an active Stormfront supporter and activist since the very first Stormfront conference. And his help, his generosity, was integral in this conference being a success, as was the local leadership of Tom Pierce and Father Francis. Tom Pierce is a local political activist who has run for local political office there in the Eastern Tennessee area and will do so again. So he has a very strong tie and a great base of grassroots support in the local community, as do his allies and friends in the Traditionalist Worker Party there in Eastern Tennessee, as well as the League of the South, who came up from Alabama with Dr. Hill. So it was a great honor to meet these people whom I have known of and communicated with for years, but had never literally been in the same room with. And that's true of probably about half of the attendees, and some of the people there I've known for quite a while, but hadn't seen in years. So we reconnected, and that was wonderful as well. But we had the Antifa outnumbered from the start. Once they began to see that we were not intimidated, we were not afraid of them, we weren't scared, they packed up and went home several hours before we actually finished with the conference. And we didn't know if they're going to come back or try to sneak back around. They never did anything except stand over there and bang their drums and give silly speeches about how they were pansexual and transsexual. And one of them was a Native American of two spirits who was in transition, male to female. And another one was part Mexican and part Black and did not know how to identify themselves. And as you can tell from the interview, we had great fun mocking them, making fun of them when we happened to be outside. And otherwise, we literally could not even hear them, did not even know that they were there, and they certainly did not disrupt our meeting. What really happened, the good Lord being on our side, was that because of their attempt to disrupt the meeting, we actually were able to get a larger, more secure venue, a much nicer venue, the Nice Lodge, fully self-contained, as well as the night before getting a larger restaurant with a lot better food. And so while the controlled media, like the Antifa, is full of lies, it's fake news, it's Lugan Press, reality is, by every measurable standard, without exception, the Stormfront Activism Conference 2017 in Eastern Tennessee from September the 29th to October the 1st was a resounding victory, an overwhelming success, and more importantly, it wasn't just one of those retreats where people come and listen to several speakers rehash the same speeches over and over again, where the average age is 70 and higher, and everyone is afraid of any kind of engagement with the enemy. It was a much younger audience. It was an audience where, frankly, I myself, at the age of 45, was older than the average attendee. And it was a conference attended primarily by activists experienced, boots on the ground, in real life activist. As myself and Dr. Hill were discussing, in the future, we can only expect this struggle to intensify, to accelerate. And as it does, we'll need more activists. We need people who are willing to understand and accept and embrace the idea that conflict with our enemies is not only inevitable, but it is preferable. We cannot and should not wish to avoid joining in battle with those who want to make our descendants extinct and to wipe them off this earth. We need to wipe them off this earth first, avoiding conflict, avoiding engagement, trying to not alienate or intimidate or frighten people is the last thing we need to do. We need to frighten our people. We need to frighten them with the reality that if they don't stand up and fight, they'll be slaves or they'll be extinct. They can take their choice. We need to frighten our enemies by reminding them and reminding ourselves that we are not competing with them for victim status. We are not victims. We are victors. We need to remind our enemies and to remind ourselves that we are conquerors by definition. We are Aryans. We are the creators and carriers of civilization. Without us, there'd be no will, no written alphabet, no emergence from the Stone Age. We need to remind our enemies and to remind ourselves that once a small, significant portion of our people, a portion which we are very close to reaching as a tipping point, are awakened, then their time is up. Their time is over. And the only thing we're going to use them for is fertilizer. When we remind our enemies and remind ourselves of who we are, then we will be conquerors once again. And that is what they fear. That is why they're in panic mode, in fight or flight, because they know they can smell the blood. They hear the beating hoofbeats of our horses charging at them. They hear our swords slicing through the air at their necks, and they know the time is short. They know what's coming, and they're scared. We should not be afraid. We'll leave that to them. Smell it. It's in the air. It smells like our enemies' fear, their desperation. We're going to destroy them. We're going to utterly crush them and wipe them out, down to the last living soul. That is inevitable, us or them. And one thing that I was encouraged by at this last weekend's Stormfront Conference is that most of the young people there, who were the majority of the conference attendees, do not shirk from the idea of conflict. They're ready for war. They know it's going to happen, and it cannot be escaped, so they really don't want to hide and put it off any longer. They are ready. More and more of our people are ready for the inevitable every single day. And it was wonderfully encouraging and inspiring and uplifting, and as they say, white-pilling for me and for my Shieldwall Network people to see that we are not alone in seeing what is coming and eagerly anticipating it. Because I can tell you that my Shieldwall Network guys, the phalanx as we call them, our defensive arm, behaved remarkably disciplined, extremely well. I am so tremendously proud of them. Each and every man in the Shieldwall Network made me as proud as if they were my own sons, with their discipline and their courage and their resolute lack of fear, their willingness to do everything necessary to keep all the Stormfront Activism Conference attendees safe and comfortable. Whether that meant walking a little lady safely to and from her car, or an elderly gentleman, or to help patrol around the trails outside, to literally drive our enemies out of the parking lot and 3/4 mile down the road to the gate when they tried to infiltrate. Standing shoulder to shoulder in the shield wall, face to face with our enemies and backing them down so that literally we ran them off. We ran them away. Antifa, these pansexuals, transsexuals, commies, anarchists, punked out once again, and we drove them out hours before the conference ended, and they never dared to come back, and we never saw them in town again. They were gone. They knew that at long last, after protesting against Tea Party elderly people and weak-cucked rhino Republicans and liver-lilied conservatives, they knew at long last they had gone up against the wall because they had found true Aryans. And our allies in the Traditionalist Worker Party and the League of the South, who were helping with the security alongside the Shield Wall Network phalanx, stood firm, made sure that everyone knew. If the police had not been there, Antifa would have left, if they were able to, much sooner. We do not need the police for our protection. The Antifa do. Time will come when the lights will go out. In that darkness when no one's looking, the Antifa will get what they've had coming for so long. If you're like us, and you know what's coming, and if you're like us, and that doesn't scare you, then I encourage you to join us in the Shield Wall Network and to learn how to become a person of influence in your community today. If you're a young man who's not afraid of fighting for your people, then I encourage you to join the Shield Wall Network and get involved in our phalanx, our defensive arm, so that you can become one of tomorrow's heroes today. To get involved with the Shield Wall Network, you can email me, roper_billy@yahoo.com, or you can go to the Shield Wall Network website, either shieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com, that's shieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com, or if that's too hard to remember, then just go to aryanwarrior.com, that's aryanwarrior.com, and click on the hyperlink on the Spartan Shield to go to the Shield Wall Network website, which is a community grassroots patriotic outreach organization of white nationalist preppers, and click on the banner, "What is the Shield Wall Network?" I'll be happy to answer any questions you have once you read that introduction. So, if you're ready to become a hero, if you're ready to recognize your roots and your heritage and to stand up for your ancestors as well as your descendants in the Shield Wall Network, then I encourage you to get involved and to join the phalanx. This next fall, continuing into the winter, things are going to heat up. We are getting closer and closer to the real deal, ladies and gentlemen, to open conflict in our country. It's something that we haven't seen coming for a long time. I and other people have been telling you for years. Now it's about here. Time has come to decide whether you want to be an active participant in your people's history as well as their future, or if you want to stay on the sidelines and watch your people's history pass you by, to be just an observer, or to actually make the difference. To be that man in the Shield Wall who strikes the blow for victory, who wins the final battle, who is remembered forever as a hero of the white race. This is Billy Roper for the Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization podcast, exclusively on RadioAryan.com. And, as always, each week, I remind you to think racially, act locally, but no matter what, keep it white.
Kill them all! We'll be right back.
have blessed our soil and blood.
It was meant to be, meant to be.
We carry it on through drought and flood.
It was meant to be, meant to be.
We build this land upon our graves.
It was meant to be.
As fortune favors just the brave.
It was meant to be, meant to be.
Don't worry, child, don't you fear at all. Don't worry, child, we will kill them all. Don't worry, child, don't you fear at all.
Is willing to publicly identify themselves as being white nationalists. 8%.
Yeah.
Now, in my lifetime, that's the highest it's ever been. That's a result of many factors, which we don't have time to get into today, from Trump's campaign, his election, and the crisis over DACA and the border wall, and what happened in Charlottesville, which we're going to hear about today by a couple of guys who are actually there. And everything else that's coming is a backlash against our people as we're recognizing that we're being pushed towards minority status and eventually extinction. And many of us are standing up and fighting back. It's also a result of the fact that they've overused the term racist and Nazi and white nationalist so much that they've taken the curse off of it. It doesn't hurt anymore. There's no more sting attached to it. People say, so what? I'm a racist because I don't want my people to become a minority in the country that was built by white people, for white people. Literally, the United States of America was established by white nationalists to be a white nationalist nation. The Founding Fathers said in 1790, when they wrote the Naturalization Act, defining who could be a citizen, that only white people could be citizens of the United States. And just in case people might think that was a mistake or a one-off, 5 years later, they doubled down and they wrote the Naturalization Act of 1795, where they said that only white people of good moral character could immigrate to the United States and become citizens. So if all the founding fathers of our nation were white nationalists, and they were, then we are all in good company. Remember that we are not traitors, we're the real patriots. We're standing up for what this country was designed and created to be.
a white nation. So if you want to have a white nation once again, then by definition, that makes you a white nationalist. And so many Americans like us in this room are recognizing that that's a better future for their children and their grandchildren than what would otherwise come to us if we did nothing. We're told over and over again that the only thing that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. If we do nothing, we face eventually minority and then extinction status. 8% of the U.S. population say that's not a future they're willing to accept, so they're publicly willing to accept being called a white nationalist now. To break it down, 323 million Americans, that means that 8% of them equal about 26 million Americans are willing to publicly identify themselves as white nationalists. 26 million Americans are willing to publicly identify themselves as white nationalists. And Arkansas has 3 million people, so imagine between 8 and 9 states the size of Arkansas full of people just like us who are willing to publicly identify themselves as white nationalists. Not being afraid of being called a racist or politically incorrect. There's a whole bandwagon effect when you ask a person a poll question in public where they want to go along with the consensus. They don't want to be the only bad guy. We all have that. It's a, no offense to the ladies, it's a feminine attribute, but our whole society has been feminized. There's women of both genders now who say what they think they're expected to say. But at 8%, if 26 million Americans are willing to publicly identify themselves as white nationalists now, then that means that we're winning. And that's why our enemies are afraid. And that's why they're trying to dox people and get them fired. That's why they're trying to put people in jail. That's why they're trying to shut down websites and deplatform internet portals. That's why they're trying to shut us up harder than ever. Because they are desperate. Because it's a panic. It's their fight or flight response kicking in. Because the Jews know that 109 times in the past, they've been kicked out of every country that they've ever parasitically infested.
The student band, I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain. We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right. Cause the fire rocks out to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We're at a wedding full of clowns. And we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America. The best idea since democracy.
Listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.